Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to explore the world of theater and arts with some of the wonderful people who are in our city visiting and performing at this time. And today, we've got a big name for you. This is a guy you've probably known for decades, can I say that? But he's in Chicago, now appearing at the Goodman Theater in a fantastic show called Betrayal by Harold Pinter. Robert Sean Leonard joins us, and what a treat. I mean, after all these years watching you on the big screen, the little screen, and everywhere else, now we get you on stage, Robert.
Well, thank you so much. It's an unbelievably fun to be here, and I've come after years of Brian Dennehy demanding that I do so, and I made it a habit to obey Brian Dennehy whenever he gave me a command. So here I am.
Yeah, and in fact, it was Long Day's Journey, right? You worked with Philip Seymour Hoffman, Brian Dennehy, and Vanessa Redgrave in that show. Unfortunately, they couldn't get any stars.
Yeah, exactly. It was a small pool in New York, but they got us. Robert Falls, a name you might be familiar with, directed it.
Of course.
And Brian, we were both theater rats, and he very often he loved New York, but New York is a tricky place. Theater is tricky in New York and very expensive in New York. So when you have your eyes on an Edward Albee play or something, New York isn't always the best place to launch it. And he would always sing the praises of Chicago and the Goodman, and that it's a great place for theaters to live and breathe. And I'm really, really thrilled to be a part of it here in town.
Yeah, it's not unusual for a Goodman show or a Steppenwolf show to make their way to Broadway. I think, in fact, even Purpose, which was just at the Steppenwolf, maybe up now, maybe running now. But this is, people talk about Chicago as like the, second theater town, and you play everywhere and stuff. What is your view of Chicago as a theater town?
Oh, I think it's New York's very different than it used to be. In the old days, a Tom Stoppard play would open and run, or a Neil Simon play would run for years, and it's certainly possible. But I get the feeling, I always got the feeling from Tom when we were Stoppard, when we worked together a few times in New York, and that there was kind of a window for plays like his. It would be, whatever it was, 3.5 months or 2.5 months, where you'd kind of run out of those people, the NPR listeners and people who follow Tom Stoppard, his audience. There was kind of a time when that was gone in New York. The theater community is not really what it used to be. If you're a huge hit and you attract the tourist attention, like Mamma Mia or something, it can still run forever. But Broadway doesn't quite have the local community audience it used to have. They're there, and certainly off-Broadway couldn't live without that, but it's not like Chicago. I get a real sense here that there's a community, and I see the show advertised on the morning news and television, and I get a real sense that there's a theater community in this town, and a loyal one, and that's definitely what something that happened used to be in New York. But I don't think it's the same anymore. And I think Chicago might be one of the few places in the country where that really exists powerfully enough to support a theater like the Goodman.
I'm really intrigued that you say that, because you've just made a point that I have made to so many guests on this show, which is to say, with all due respect, I love New York. I'm out there, as much as I can be there and see everything. But to me, the theater audiences in New York are what you've said. They're tourists. It's a thing to do when you go to New York. So line up at the Hot Ticks booth or whatever and go get yourself some tickets to see something. But in Chicago, you're getting this mainstay Chicago theater community that I've had many actors describe to me as sophisticated. They get it. And it's one of the reasons so many shows and producers want to start their shows here in Chicago, even on the musical end, the Jerry Mitchells of the world, who start their shows in Chicago because of the lessons they're going to learn by the time they get it to Broadway.
I think that's right. And I think it's a real gift to an artist, and it's a real gift to a community to have. I went to an urgent care medical place. I think my first week here, I felt like I was getting something, and I just dropped in, and my doctor came in, and she was a Goodman season ticket holder. And I thought, this town is just, it's so small, it's so lovely, you know. And how fun to be a season ticket holder, to live in this town, to have tickets, season tickets to the Goodman, the Steppenwolf, fill in the blank, you know, five or six of them. And it's part of your life. You go, it's like going to see the Yankees, you know. Well, not what they would do that here, but where I come from. But, you know, it's, and that leads to you seeing plays and being exposed to theatrical things that you may not have chosen or ticked off the list, but you go because you're a season ticket holder and you discover these things you never knew existed. And that's an incredibly fun part of being in a community. And I miss it in New York.
And by the way,
you know, but it's just not the same.
And come back for a Cubs game too, because that same sort of friendly confines of Wrigley Field thing, you'll feel as well. Look, we're going to talk about betrayal. It's playing through through March 30th at the Goodman. And of course, Goodman will be very upset if we don't spend much time on that, but you've just had such amazing career. Can I just touch bases? I mean, 3-time Tony nominee, you won it for The Invention of Love, but can I take you back a million years to Dead Poets Society?
There's no problem with me ever going back to Dead Poets Society.
Well, because first of all, you worked with Ethan Hawke in that, but is that where you met? Because then you started a theater company with him.
That's true. It is where we met. We met at the auditions for Dead Poets, the later auditions, the callbacks and screen tests and things. He was a 17-year-old from Plainsboro, Princeton Junction, New Jersey, I think is the town. He had made a movie with River Phoenix, a little one of those kind of 80s sci-fi kids movies called Explorers, about kids who build a spaceship in their backyard. And so I knew of him. I don't think I ever saw the film, but I as an actor, I knew his name as a kid actor. I was only 19. That was the first time I met him. We got along incredibly well on Poets. We all did. All seven of the boys in Dead Poets were very, 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 it was like going to college. Friendships that lasted a lifetime. And then Ethan hit New York and we had our 20s in New York. And
Stephen Zahn joined you as you started the Malapart Theater Company. Now that dissolved in 2000. Why?
Well, it didn't really, I would say a theater company would be a heavy term for it. It was Ethan, we had a friend named Jonathan Mark Sherman, who was a playwright, Steve Zahn, Calista Flockhart, Frank Whaley, Peter Dinklage, all of our kind of pals.
Again, names nobody knows.
Right. We're gathered around and there were these incredibly fun little theaters on 42nd Street on what's called Theater Row. They're all about 99 seat sized houses, and you can just rent them. Anyone can. And we rented the Theater Row Theater, which is on Dyer and 42nd, and for the summer. And just, you know, we never got paid or had, you know, dues. It was not really a theater company. It was just a group of people who grabbed a few plays and put them up very cheaply, and we all just did it for fun. And the tickets were $10 or something. And but it was great fun. I think we did it 2 or 3 years. I don't remember, but I wouldn't disband it is a strong word for how we ended up.
Okay.
Topping it.
Well, fair enough. But you know, when you see these powerful groups, I mean, here you have David Schwimmer and Looking Glass, and you have John Malkovich and Gary Sinise and the Steppenwolf. I mean, that's where these things come from. So it's why I was intrigued by that. I have one question about Robin Williams and just your memories. Was he crazy all the time? Clearly brilliant. But just share something about Robin Williams maybe that helps us understand him a little better.
Believe me, it's something I've been trying to understand for a long, long time. Dead Poets Society, we shot about 3 months, I think. It was one of those movies, they don't do that much anymore, but a real 3-month shoot. And if my memory is correct, I think Robin was there for 2 weeks. So I don't have his run in that film. Those weeks was very quick, and then he was gone. And I never saw him. I might have seen him once after that, but he was very private, and it's odd because now that I'm an older person and I've played Atticus Finch and I've played Harold Hill and I've done things where there are kids in the cast, it's very hard not to avoid them. It's very hard Oh, sorry. It's very hard to avoid them, and you don't want to. You know, you meet their parents, and they look up to you so much, and you become a big part of their experience, and you know that. And I took it seriously, and they were a big part of the experience for me. And Robin, later on, when I knew more about him, it made more sense. He was extremely private, and he'd be crazy when the camera rolled, but boy, I never saw anyone shut down so completely. You know, the camera would stop and he would just be still and quiet. And he was not, friendly is not the word. He was just, he didn't reach out too much. And now that I know what I know about him, it makes sense. I think he was feeling things that no one knew at that time. And I adored working with him. He was very kind and generous and a really good actor. But it was curious to me at the time, his distance from us. And I thought at the time, maybe he's doing it on purpose to maintain this kind of mystery in our performances with this man, this older figure in our lives, which may have been true, but I don't know. But I'm not an expert. I did not get to know. I spent a lot of time with John Keating, but I didn't spend much time with Robin Williams.
Fair enough. And we saw as his career went on that you were probably seeing things that were there sort of in earlier days. I just want to just one other person from your past, and that was Christopher Reeve, who directed you in The Gloaming back in 97. And he's kind of, there's a resurgence interest in Christopher Reeve now with the documentaries and all this stuff going on.
Yeah, well deserved.
Fond memories of him?
Oh, gosh, Chris was a saint. I mean, I met him very much earlier than that. He was a part of a political group. I'm not sure it's a capital P there, but it was a political group that Alec Baldwin, and I think he started, just a pretty left-wing kind of New York actors. We flew to Tucson once. A teacher had been fired because they picked a play with a gay character, and we went out to do a reading of the play, and we did things like that. But Chris was part of it. He was a very, very sweet guy, an incredibly good actor, deceptively simple. He was not. He was an incredibly deep and interesting actor and very good director. And I was not a very close friend of his, but I definitely called him a friend. And he called me to do this film with Strathairn and Glenn. And it was a real sort of, I've got a barn and I've got a script and let's do a play feel to it. And I enjoyed it very much. It was very, very, one of my favorite jobs I ever, ever did.
All right. Well, fantastic. And of course, everybody knows you for your role in House as James Wilson with Hugh Laurie and stuff. Is that, by the way, people that recognize you, is it mostly about House or is it, because look, you've also been in the Gilded Age, right? And that's got a whole, I love that show. That's where we were, you're Luke Forte there. I mean, what do people stop you for today?
Sometimes I don't know, and sometimes they don't say, but I've noticed if I'm wearing a suit, I get stopped quite a bit more because I wore a suit pretty much or something. Probably people just think I look like the guy on House, whereas when I'm in a suit, they just nail me. But it's mostly House, but I would say it may be equally Dead Poets. It affected a lot of people, and a lot of people see it in schools, and a lot of people's parents show it to their kids. And as I said, quite a few people never mention it. They just stop me and say they like my work, and I chat with them, and they don't mention what work it is precisely. But it's probably about 50-50.
Well, one of the things that I found charming about you as we met at WGN Studios one day was how warm you are, how friendly you were. It was almost stunning to just see how friendly that you were and willing to do this. And so, by the way, are you going back to Gilded Age?
No, I died on the Gilded Age. Don't apologize for not watching it because I didn't either.
I do watch it, though.
Oh, I don't. Well, I died of I honestly don't know exactly. I think it was some kind of back cancer. I had back pain in one scene, and then next scene I was dead. I couldn't believe it. But it was a one season part because I was a suitor for Cynthia Nixon, and I mean, that show is essentially The Odd Couple, and you can't, you know.
Oh, you do die. That's right. No, no, not. See, that helped. Listen, the problem is the show's on every 5 years. So
exactly,
you know, but it's for its new season. But I did interview recently Claiborne Elder. So I hope you got to see Clay and Carrie Coon from here.
Yeah, I love Clay. Clay, I did a revival of Sunday in the Park with George with Jake Gyllenhaal with Clay. We had a really lovely time on Broadway doing that. He's an amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And I know you're in that as well. Yes. Yes. Oh, by the way, I learned that Sean is actually not your real middle name. It belongs to somebody else.
Yes, Philip Seymour Hoffman and I commiserated on this all the time. At a certain point, as the roles grew in our unions, it became necessary. You know, you can't join the Screen Actors Guild and say your name is Al Pacino. It doesn't work, even if it is. And I joined, my name's Robert Lawrence Leonard. And when I joined Equity, it was fine. I was right my first film. I was quite literally in line at the SAG office in New York City. And I was signing up to join the union. And they said, nope, we've got a Robert Leonard and a Robert P. Leonard. So you need to change your name. I'm standing on the line. I hadn't prepared at all. And I said, well, I don't. And they said, unless you want a full, if you have a full middle name between those two, we can do that. And Lawrence, I just thought Robert Lawrence Leonard seems like quite a handful. And my brother's name is Sean. And I thought that seemed a bit better because you can kind of skip right by it, like stepping on a stone over a river, just Robert John Leonard.
And a tribute to your brother.
Yeah, yeah. And it drove him nuts. But my Sean is my brother's name.
So, gotcha.
But
Michael
Robert
J. Fox
Leonard
had the same. Michael J. Fox couldn't be Michael Fox. Same kind of
right.
Brother.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Let's talk about Betrayal, where you play Jerry, the friend. First of all, for people who, at this point, you're on your second extension or whatever going on as you play through March 30th. But for those who haven't seen it, my goodness, you know, Helen Hunt, Jan Barford, three-person cast. I was there on opening night watching you from the front row center. Tell people about this, what is essentially based on a true story of the playwright.
Yes, it's by Harold Pinter. He wrote it in the early 70s. It's a play about a couple and the husband's best friend and an affair that the best friend and the wife have. In life, Harold was the best friend, the one who had the affair. And it's an incredibly interesting play. It's a little bit of almost like a murder mystery, sort of, but because the play takes place backwards and you kind of have to track what's going on. And there are clues throughout and he leaves breadcrumbs and it's a really unique play. I've never read a play like it. It's really fun and it's an incredibly well-written journey and a pleasure to perform every night.
Yeah, I want to. This is what when you read the critiques have been great and all that. The reviews. There's one question that always comes up, so let me ask you.
Sure.
It's about the age of the characters. When mm-hmm. Pinter wrote it, it was his personal story. It's about a man that has an affair, and Pinter had gone through this, but he was younger at the time that he did it. And so you see this sort of debate between people who know that or don't know that, and they raise the question as to whether these characters who are, you're all, with all due respect, older than the 30-year-olds that Pinter would have portrayed. But I mean, it wasn't that also, aside from I'm sure the Goodman wanted to get you three stars on that stage, but it's actually a directorial choice to say, let's see what this kind of challenge to a marriage looks like when the couple is older.
Yes, that's. I think that was the angle on it. I wasn't in the meetings when Susan Booth, who directed the play and runs the Goodman, directed it, luckily. And because she's wonderful. I wasn't there in those meetings, but yes, the characters are 37. Well, they age because this play takes place over 7 years. So, but we're about 20 years past that, most of us. So it's just a question of how important you think the age is to the characters' experiences and how they react to them. I'm of the camp that it's, as you said, it's an interesting exercise to examine what this story looks like with older people involved. And we have found, I have found anyway, that there have been no bumps in the road because of that. I'm sure there would be differences if we were in our 30s and you'd notice in our performances, but I'm not sure. I don't know what they'd be, but
well, let me ask you. So since you are older than that, when you looked at the script and studied the play, knowing that he's written to be in his mid-30s and you're not. Did I mean, how did you approach it? Did you say, okay, I've got to deal with the man who's in his later 50s?
No, I don't really work that way. I just I can't remember the age of most of the characters I play. It's not really. The first thing I noticed in this play was that the woman I'm in love with and my best friend, her husband, have a daughter named Charlotte. And I noticed that in almost every scene, my character asks about her. How did Charlotte enjoy it? How is Charlotte? And then the first scene of the play, which is our last scene chronologically, where we reunite, Helen Hunt and I, years after our affair, I say, oh, I saw Charlotte the other day. She didn't see me in the street. I saw her in the street. And I thought, that's so interesting that he's so, there's something about this kid. And that, things like that draw me to scripts. Until I look in the mirror, I assume, I'm pretty sure I'm 28 almost every day. And I
get it.
You know, I don't feel 56. So I don't, this play's about human beings. And as I said, I'm sure our ages affect decisions we make in the play in ways we don't know. But the important thing is that you've got a good actor on stage who's a human being. Whether they're 37 or 57, I don't think matters too much.
Helen Hunt talked about the fact that when they came to her with the play, when she found out who was in it, you and Jan, and that, you know, it was a go for that. A lot of people come to, let's be honest, a lot of people come to see the show because you folks are in it, right? You guys, your names are a draw. Does that matter to you? I mean, do you want people to come and say, no, I just need to see Betrayal as the play because it's a Pinter play? Or are you okay knowing, I realize a lot of you are here because you're about to see Robert Sean Lawner and Helen Hunt. And Jan Barford is sort of homegrown here, so he's well known, but we do see him on local stages.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. It doesn't bother me at all. It's not even in my head. It's like, Bruce Springsteen wondering whether it's fair to, you know, play a new song to an audience who came to hear
Born
Jungle
to Run.
Born to Run. I love this piece. It's a piece of art. I'm just an interpreter. I'm like a violin player in an orchestra. I'm not Beethoven. I just play my instrument, as Brian Dennehy used to say. And I really, really love this piece. And if people come to see Yo-Yo Ma play at Lincoln Center, and they hear a piece by a composer they didn't know, all the better. There's a reason Yo-Yo Ma chose to be in it, or play it. So, no, I don't even think about it. I think I'm so proud of this evening. I'm so proud of this play. One of the great selling points to people these days is it's about 73 minutes long. So it's also, you know, it's not the Long Day's Journey into Night. So, even if you don't like it, you'll be out quick, but I really,
yeah, but for those of them who go up to the snobby lounge, that's taking an intermission drink away. So
right. I'm sorry. Yeah, we whip that away from you, but you are home by 9:30 and you can tuck in and watch Judge Judy sooner than you normally would on most theater evenings. So there's that.
Yeah, or turn on Behind the Curtain. It's all possible.
That would be nice too.
So are you having a different experience when you're in front of Chicago audiences? We talked about Chicago versus New York, but are you feeling the connection more when you're in Chicago on our stages than you might in a New York audience? Or can I drop you anywhere and you'd be fine?
I think for me, no. I'm not a guy. I'm not the kind of actor who's in a show like Mamma Mia or Cats, or, you know, the things.
But you're a Music Man.
I was in Music Man, but it was that was I think the Music Man is an aberration because it's such an American treasure. It's a bit like when Jeff Daniels did To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm. That speaks to a larger audience than just a general musical like Mamma Mia, a general American audience. More people come to Broadway from Pennsylvania or upstate New York to see things like To Kill a Mockingbird than they would to see Betrayal. So the audiences I play for in Tom Stoppard plays and Eugene O'Neill plays, George Bernard Shaw plays, Edward Albee plays, the playwrights I've done are similar to the Chicago audiences because they're usually pretty tuned in. If you go to the Broadway to see an Edward Albee play, you're a pretty avid theater goer. You're not just here from Sweden on the weekend with your kids and you go see, you know, Lion King. So I don't know. I think there might be a different feel in the Lion King with an audience that is and nothing against them, but that is made up mostly of people who are there, as you said, for a night out, versus people who have come to see a particular play because they love this playwright. I imagine that feels a little different in a theater, but I don't think I've ever done the former, so I can't really speak to it. But no, the experience to me is very similar, because when you do Stoppard in New York, the audiences are pretty enthusiastic, and so far every audience we've had in Chicago has been very enthusiastic. So I guess I've just been lucky.
And by the way, as you said, this show goes in backwards time, right? It ends at the beginning. Is your mind, what happens in your mind as you begin at the end where everything's already happened? And as the play moves on, you work back towards the beginning before you know anything is going, although it's questionable what you knew and when you knew it. But that being said, are you going through sort of mental, are all the characters going through kind of mental changes to address that?
Well, the actors, we had to work quite a bit in rehearsal because there'd be moments in scene six or scene three where I would forget if I knew yet about A, B, or C, has Jan found out yet that the affair is happening, or is that in the other scene? Because you're out of order. But once you cement that down and you know where you are, it is different. It's certainly odd to start a play at the end of a character's journey and work your way back to where they start. It's a trick, but it's a new one for me. But it's ultimately, once you know the play well, it's not any more difficult than doing a play in the correct order, or chronologically speaking. So,
is the rehearsal done as it's written, or is the rehearsal? Do you ever in the rehearsal go the other way, just till you get to have the experience of going through it real time?
Is exactly right. We would occasionally do read throughs. We just sit and read through the play from the beginning to the end, time wise. And if I remember correctly, I can't believe I can't remember this. Well, I'm 56. But I believe we did start in order. I think we began our first rehearsal with the last scene you see as an audience member, which is our first scene as in the timeline of our characters. I believe that's how we did it. I could be wrong, but I believe that's how we did it.
Before we wrap, you got some decent time in Chicago here, and you're welcome for the weather. Are you getting to, are we doing the architect? I don't even know if the boat tours are running yet. I'm not quite sure, but are you doing Chicago things while you're here?
I am. My sister and brother were just in town for the weekend, and they are ashamed of me always because I don't do anything. When I'm doing a play, I'm not a big tourist. I'm staying in Lincoln Park. I got a great Airbnb here and I love it. And it reminds me of my Greenwich Village days when I was younger, and I walk all over Lincoln Park and over the lake, and I really want to hit the museum before I go, but I don't think I've eaten in one restaurant. I mean, I when I get to a town to do a play, I buy about 16 boxes of spaghetti. I'm a pretty simple guy, and I don't get out much. But I do love I love the people who walk their dogs in Lincoln Park. I love the Brown Line. I love walking down Armitage. I very, very much am plugged into Lincoln Park neighborhood, and I appreciate every moment of being here. I really love being here.
So the Lou Malnati's pizza and the Garris popcorn, this is yet to happen.
I don't even get those references. I'm assuming they're sort of touristy big things in Chicago.
Oh no, they're actually no, they're very famous here. I mean, if I were going to take you for pizza, I would take you.
Loop.
Yeah, that's like an old Al Capone.
Yeah, Jan and I would go there on our breaks for a burger or a salad or something. Feels very New York to me. Not to steal it from Chicago, but it does. So I've been to a few places, but I have to say I don't have a list I'm ticking off of the sites.
Come back and let a few of us shine a show you around. By the way, if you go to places like you went to, or the Exchequer, which is also right there, have you walked inside the Auditorium Theater yet just to see the inside of that building?
No, I haven't.
You're only a couple blocks from the Auditorium Theater. It's one of the great, built by Burnham and Daniel Burnham and Sullivan. One of the original theaters here, 125, 30 years old. It's stunning. It's
great. I'll give it a look. That's great.
I'm going to go take a look at Robert Sean Leonard. I saw you on opening night, but people get to see you through March 30th at the Goodman Theater. They can get tickets at goodmantheater.org. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. I'm always impressed when we spell it that way. It shows that we get it. And the show is Harold Pinter's portrayal, where you not only get to see Robert, but you get to see the amazing Helen Hunt and our own Jan Barford and how fantastic it is. Thank you. Please continue to enjoy the city, and please come back and do another show, because it's so great when you're here.
Well, thank you. I'm having a lovely time here, and I'm thrilled to be a part of it. Thanks for including me and having me on.
All right. And I, by the way, I just want our viewers and listeners to know that this show, Behind the Curtain, soon premiering on WGN Plus, the new app that if you don't have, you should have, available through Apple and Roku and Firefox, Fire Stick, whatever they call that stuff. So available in that format as well, coming soon. You'll see the same great content. And thanks for joining me. For now, take care. And thanks for joining us Behind the Curtain.